Hello and welcome to the Eye on the U podcast, the Miami Herald, Miami Hurricanes podcast. I'm David Wilson. I'm joined, as always, on the other line by Susan Miller Degnan, our Hurricanes beat writer here at the Herald. Susan, what's going on?
Well, I'm not in the Pacific Northwest, even though I'm wearing a Portland t-shirt. I am in the Northeast, in kind of up the elevation a little bit in Westchester, New York, about an hour north of New York City, with my in-laws. My family, my grandchildren are coming, about 26 of us. My husband's cooking Thanksgiving dinner. It smells so good in here right now. Anyway, it's all is well.
Well, I'm back here in Miami, and obviously we'll both be in the building on Saturday for Miami Pitt. Actually, my first Miami game in quite a while that I'll be at. It's an important one, obviously, for Miami, sitting at 5-6, need a win to make a bowl game. Obviously, want to send the seniors out with a win on Senior Day. Miami has not missed a bowl game since, 2007?
Other than last year because of COVID.
Has qualified for a bowl game every year since 2007.
Exactly.
A big one coming this weekend. Coming off a win against Clemson, I would say an unsurprising loss to Clemson. Miami, I don't think either of us thought had a shot in that game, although they kind of did in the fourth quarter if the offense had not been absolutely horrific. 98 yards, a third fewest in a game in Miami history. There have been some bad years in Miami history. So obviously that wasn't great. They had it within two touchdowns with about 13 minutes to go with the ball too. And then just couldn't do anything with it. Clemson pulls away in the end. Weirdly, for a game that Miami kind of got crushed in, I would say closer than the final score indicated, than that 40-10. One of the better, it's a pretty low bar, but it's pretty much as well as they have played Clemson in the last, basically like since Clemson became a superpower. But that offense, we have to start there because it was a historically bad offensive performance from Miami. I'm not surprised the offense struggled. Even, Jakar obviously riding high off that Georgia Tech game where he played so well. We knew the difficulty was going to ramp up on Saturday, and he struggled, unsurprisingly. But what was surprising, I guess, is the extent to which the offense as a whole struggled. Nothing going in the run game the entire game. It probably could have been, Jakari obviously misses a long throw to Xavier Restrepo on the second play of the game. If he makes that throw, that's an extra 50 yards or whatever if he just makes that throw. So, part of it was, the offense has been bad all year and clearly just like has no identity or cohesion. But also part of it is obviously also starting a true freshman in his second career start and the struggles you expect from that. The offense is a disaster. There's not a whole lot to say at this point. We've kind of talked about it all, but what did you think? You were obviously there in Clemson. What did you think of, I want to kind of specifically focus in on Jakari because he's the interesting part of this. The thing I think we can actually learn about what did you think of the way that you didn't talk to him after the game, just the way that he handled that situation, the adversity, all that kind of stuff.
I mean, it's hard to say how he handled the adversity. It's easy to say that he's exactly the way I thought it would go. First of all, Clemson has, amazing athletes.
Yes.
And they're
even defense, without Brian Brzee, they're maybe arguably their best defensive player, didn't play, but they still got four other like NFL defensive linemen.
Oh yeah, their defense is so good. And there's no way Jakari did not have a shot. And between Miami's offensive line, Jakari got sacked three times, but I mean they were pressuring the whole time.
Right. He's turning sacks into 1 yard scrambles, right? Because that's the kind of player he is.
He just didn't have a shot. He had one beautiful run, at least. I mean, his running is really good. But, as we said last week, his throwing is passing, is suspect.
Erratic.
You and I talked about erratic is a better word, erratic. Like you were saying that he said he has a rocket for an arm. And I said, well, okay, that's great. That's nice. Yeah. But can he hit people? Can he, you know, hit his targets? And I, you know, between Clemson's defense and Jakari really needing, obviously he's young, but he needs to improve in that area. Mm-hmm. He's not elite at all in that area so far. So far that we've seen, he's only started 2 games, right?
Right.
And he's very young. But you know, so as far as handling it, I think he's a pretty mature, really good kid. And Tyler was there. Tyler Van Dyke, mm-hmm. even though he did not play, I guess. And Jake goes in the fourth quarter. We were wondering maybe if Jake should have gone in sooner.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it gets a touchdown. It's a little dicey, you know, we weren't sure. It was a little wobbly, whatever. I mean, everybody was nervous. I mean, poor Jake got just creamed.
That's a tough spot. I mean, we talk about it all the time, how tough it is for backup quarterbacks to come. I never try to evaluate like what a backup quarterback.
Oh yeah. It wasn't warm.
Especially in that situation. Yeah.
Terrible. Gets thrown in at the end of the game.
And down big. Everyone down knows big,
and
throw.
He got split. Yeah. And you know what? His stats say that he fumbled again. He got killed. Did you see that sack?
Yes.
I mean, he got I was scared for him. I thought this kid's like done. And you know, he got back up, but I felt really bad. That was kind of the end. UM lost the ball. And Clemson, you knew, was going to pour it on. They're fighting for the college football playoff. And you knew that Dabo Swinney was going to just keep pouring it on.
Yeah, the announcers were loving Dabo's kid and Kirk Herbstreit's kid in the game. They kept pointing him out on every snap on that last drive, the garbage time drive.
But anyway, so that, you know, Jakari, he played exactly with it.
Yeah.
The way I thought he would against an elite team.
Yeah. Yeah, so I would say, you know, it's interesting to look at how he played against Georgia Tech and how he played against Clemson, because there's two obviously massively opposite sides of the spectrum. Georgia Tech, you know, not the worst team in Power Five, right? But probably not going to make a bowl game. And Clemson, obviously, in the mix of the playoff. And you could see against a team like Georgia Tech, his like athletic excellence and natural ability, like it could take over, right? He ran the ball so well in that game. And Georgia Tech, I mean, you can see they focused on, they wanted to take away his running because you saw how well Jalen Knighton ran as a result. Whereas Clemson obviously went in with the same plan and shut down everything, right? Like shut down that, it was just a reminder that he's kind of one-dimensional player, because obviously, you know, he's thrown a couple touchdowns, but pretty close to a one-dimensional player as a guy who can run. And the throw, like Clemson was like, all right, try to throw on us. And he couldn't. I mean, if he hits that first throw to X, maybe things are different, because then you got to account for it a little bit more. But once he missed that first throw, like Clemson was like, all right, just do that again. And
I agree. I don't even know how things, maybe I'm being a pessimist, but I don't even think things would have been that different.
Yeah. Personally. Well, I think they probably would have still said, all right, do it again. Right. Like, let's see, hit that throw four more times.
And I mean, the idea that Miami got 30 yards rushing, now 30 yards rushing. I'm looking at stats, and that's, they lost 14 yards on sacks.
Mm-hmm.
But come on, I you know, forget it. You're done if you get 30 yards rushing.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, that, especially when you can't throw, right? Like that was the whole promise of Jakari, is you're going to at least run the ball well. And obviously that's what Mario wants to do, what Gattis wants to do. And
their defense UM's defense does fight to the end. I love that. I really love that. I mean, Cam Kinchins was totally, he had a great game, but he was totally bummed out.
Yeah.
After the game, I think what somebody asked him what the morale of the team was. And he's like, what do you expect it to be? We lost. Yeah. Okay. He didn't say much after the game.
Yeah.
But the defense is to be commended.
If Miami gets that defensive performance with the offense they had last year or the year before, they might win that game, right? Like the defense was obviously they gave up three quick touchdowns. But after that, they were fantastic.
Right.
You know, they obviously were on the field a ton because Miami, they ran, I think, 19 offensive plays in the first half. Like they were, the defense has been, it's interesting because we've talked so much about the underclassmen over the last few weeks here, all the freshman starters. And I think it's interesting to like think about the way the defensive underclassmen and the offensive underclassmen compare, because the offensive guys are kind of, and maybe it's a product of just the offense has been a mess all year and like they have no cohesion. But the offensive guys, like, it's kind of like you feel like, all right, good experience for these guys, right? Like Jakari, like, you know, flashes, the offensive lineman, good that two freshmen are starting. Like they're going to benefit from this. Jaleel Skinner, right? Like flashes.
He was another one that, now there was great defense on that play towards the end of the game.
Oh yeah.
There was a pass that he could have caught. Yeah. I don't know.
Jeremiah Trotter Jr. came in and kind of broke it up. But yeah,
it was broken up, but it was, you know, it was, I don't know. But, yeah. But
anyway, what I was saying is the deep difference, the offensive guys, it's all flashes. The defensive guys, like the best players on that defense are the young guys. So I think it's hard not to feel encouraged about the way the defense is going when you've got, you know, you want to say who you list off the five best players in the defense, you're probably saying Cam Kitchens, Tyreek Stevenson, probably James Williams, Leonard Taylor, Daryl Jackson. Like four of those five guys are underclassmen who will be back next year. You throw in Wesley Bissaint, who I think has been
Wesley. Yeah.
I forgot about Akeem Mezidor, who is also technically third year sophomore. You know, it's weird with the coach. Technically a sophomore. Yeah. You know, could go pro, could come back, whatever. Like there's a reasons to feel good about the defense, but the offense, it's been the story of the year, the way it has fallen off a cliff from last year. And obviously Tyler Van Dyke's injury contributed a lot. And I think maybe it's even like at this point kind of under discussed how much it is contributing to the offensive struggles. But yeah, it is not, you know, even when he was out there it had some good moments, but it was clearly the weakness of this team, which is shocking considering where they were a year ago.
Agree on all counts.
Yeah.
That's all you can say.
Sounds like there's an outside chance Tyler could play this weekend. Definitely, like Mario every week kind of sounds more and more positive about it. He's obviously keeping it close to the vest. But last game of the season, you think there's a real chance he plays on Saturday?
I do. I got a tip last week, actually. They were preparing to do their best to start him. Mm-hmm. That's before Mario even told us that. And it sounds like they are. It sounded like more than just Mario trying to have them prepare for both quarterbacks. I mean, it might end up that way. I think Mario, obviously the players, fans, but really wants to win this game. I really believe that. I mean, it's really important to him. Of course, it's important for him to win every game, but and I don't think he wants to end up with a 5-7 record. I think he wants the players to, go out on top at Hard Rock, which they haven't been able to do. They've lost four games in a row there. Yeah. He'd like them to have another shot at a bowl game, even though we know it's going to be a lower tier bowl, but still the kids get excited for it. And it gives, like Will Mallory said, it's not just a sudden, oh my God, like black and white, like all of a sudden they're playing and then bye-bye. Exit interviews, goodbye. It gives them another month together to kind of get used to the idea that they're saying goodbye and all that stuff.
Yeah. I do not want a situation like the Florida State game, I will say that, where you bring Tyler in when he's clearly not ready. Like we don't know what happened exactly, whether he looked fine and then all of a sudden, you know, you can get hurt again, right? Like it happens.
Right.
But if that, I mean, he's like in a game like this, where this team is not really playing for much other than a bowl game, like you cannot risk an injury like that to your quarterback who, I mean, it's kind of the elephant in the room at this point is like, what is going to happen to Tyler after this year? Is he, is he going to still try to go pro and, you know, settle for, you know, probably not a first round pick now. I never really thought he was going to be a first round pick necessarily, but is he going to try to go pro? Is he going to come back? Could he transfer? Like, that's the elephant in the room right now. You got to prioritize his health, but it also is benefit, you know, for the program. Like, you don't want to put him in a situation where he feels like he's not being protected and he wants to get out of here. Like,
I mean,
your best hope to be good next year is still him coming back.
Oh, absolutely. And I don't think if he thinks he's not ready, or his people or whoever,
yeah, you got to listen to him.
They're not going to play him if he thinks, it makes me a little concerned about him starting. If he does, it does make me concerned. I'm not convinced the same thing's not going to happen.
It's the coach's responsibility to protect a player from himself, right? Like,
yes,
you can't feel like you don't want to feel like you've made a bad decision to decide to play.
I mean, I agree. I just think when you're in an actual stressful, like your body is in a stressful situation, and it's during the game, you're in game action, that what I'm saying is, I'm sure Tyler seems, if they're playing him, he seems fine and whatever, he seems healed. But then you get all tight in that situation and you haven't been hit. Remember, they do not tackle in practice. They do not tackle now at this point of the season. So, you know, once that game starts, and like, I'm looking at the stats now, and Pitt is one of the best defenses in the nation, by the way. They're number three nationally in sacks. Mm-hmm. Okay. Sacks per game, number three out of like 131 teams. They're eighth in rushing defense, eighth. Okay. And 16th in total defense.
Yeah.
I mean, you think they're not going to be blitzing and coming after Tyler or whomever? Yeah, and like, it scares me. It scares me. One hard hit on his shoulder or whatever. I don't know. I don't know if it's the right decision if they do start him. But it's not for me to say, I guess.
Yeah, it's different now too than it was the Florida State game. But it was not a fair situation for Jake and Jakari to be in either. When you play a quarterback who's at risk of re-injury. And you have to get thrust into that. Obviously, it's different now that Jakari has real experience. It was the Florida State game was a mess for so many reasons, but the Tyler situation was definitely part of it. I mean, I hope he's good enough to play and play well and all that, because I like watching him play and we haven't seen him in a while. Yeah. And I think Miami has to feel like they don't know what their offense is right now in some ways. You know, obviously everyone's going to get reevaluated at the end of the year, including Josh Gattis. And part of what Josh Gattis is going to say is, I was missing a top 10 quarterback in the country for half the season. Like, what do you want from me? So it'd be good to see two more games from Tyler in this offense and see what they can actually do. Hopefully he's able to play this weekend and lead him to a bowl game and play again in the bowl game.
If Tyler, you know, if we learn whether he's coming back
right,
or not,
that's, and
if he's
that's
not
the other
coming
part
back, then maybe he doesn't play in the bowl game if they win. So I, you know, that.
Yeah.
That
and if they know he's not coming back, then does it even make sense for him to play? Right. Like if they have a feeling he's going to go pro or he's got a transfer or something, like, then play Jakar. Like it right. is a lot that I would think Mario has a better grasp of than we do on stuff like that. Or I would hope he does at least. Mm-hmm. That would go into, I think, influencing the quarterback decision for this weekend. And like you said, potentially a bowl game as well. Okay, so it's senior day, obviously, also. I wrote about something, obviously, you're writing about in your advance, too. That'll be up probably around this time most of you people are listening to this. I wrote about them on Tuesday. Mm-hmm. A group of seniors that has been through a lot in their Miami career. I looked it up. Wayman Steed, who is the most experienced player on the roster, a sixth year senior, who's been at Miami all 6 years. He didn't sign, but orally committed to Miami when Al Golden was the coach. So that is how long some of these guys have been around the program. Obviously, the group of him and the class a year after him, which is like Will Mallory, John Campbell, Gilbert Frierson, obviously those
DJ Scaife,
DJ Ivy, I think are the five left from that class. Those guys have played for three coaches. I know, like, senior day, it's like a, you know, like, it's a cliche, right? Send it at the seniors with a win, but I do kind of like think this senior class kind of deserves it for all they've been through.
Oh, for sure. I mean, I agree, and it's always an emotional day for them. It is. And Mario knows that. I mean, right. He knows that it's very important to the players. Their families come, they get introduced to whatever on the field before the game. And it's sad for them because, again, it has to be like a, almost like a sad moment, nostalgic moment. I don't know. It's just that when they run through the smoke, they know everything's the last time. And I guarantee that there are going to be a lot of tears after this game. If they lose, a lot of tears. There's going to be a lot of tears, and maybe if they win, there'll be tears. You know, I know it's just a lot of emotions, and I agree they deserve it. And God knows how many fans are going to be there, but at least it's an 8:00, an 8 p.m. kick. You know, it's on ACC Network for people who want to know how to get it.
Mm-hmm. And, which I think means a lot of our listeners, including myself, do not get that channel because we're Xfinity subscribers.
Oh, I'm Comcast, so I get it, but I'll be there. So they deserve it. I hope they have a good game. Pittsburgh's good. Pittsburgh has already qualified. Pittsburgh has won 3 games in a row, David. And they're 7-4 overall. So they're coming in, you know. They're feeling strong and good. The thing is that they have already qualified for their bowl.
Right.
So yeah. This game is not, let's, I don't know.
Yeah. Pitt is kind of interesting because remember last year, I mean, this last year, this was one of the games of the year in the ACC, Miami, Tyler Van Dyke, Kenny Pickett in an absolute shootout.
And Kenny Pickett was great, but he threw at least one pick.
Yes.
I know he did. One or two. And Tyler was.
I think James Williams had a clutch interception in that game, if I remember correctly.
All I know is Tyler was amazing.
Yeah.
And they came back. There were some good Pitts. Oh, my God. There's some good Pittsburgh games the last several years. Really.
Yeah. Well, they ended Miami's undefeated run in 2017. Yeah. Kenny Pickett. I believe it was Kenny Pickett's first start.
I think it was. Yes, yeah. It was. That was really cool. And I remember in Pitt, of course, this is here, but in Pitt, snow and the UM players with their bare-chested going out with no tops at all, warming up in the snow and the cold, throwing the ball around. It was really funny. And they won. They won that game.
But anyway, it's interesting. That game was such a shootout last year. And then you saw both teams come back this year and try to totally change your offensive identity. Pitt obviously loses Kenny Pickett, bringing Keaton Slovis from USC, who has thrown more interceptions than touchdowns this year.
And lost Addison.
Yeah, and Jordan Addison, obviously, is the transfer portal.
Yeah.
They've just become this power running team, which is obviously, that's Pat Narduzzi's, like, MO. That's what, you know, it was an outlier for him to have that high-powered, high-octane offense last year. But they made the pivot well. Israel Abakanda, I believe is how you pronounce the last name.
Yep. That's right.
1,300 yards already this year. One of the best running backs, you know, all conference type guy.
One of the best.
Miami tried to do the same pivot this year and it just hasn't worked. And obviously the injuries, like I said, are part of it, but it's interesting to see that Pitt flipped its identity and, you know, 7 wins now, obviously looking for 8. I think they've underachieved as well for a team that started the year in the top 25. But they've at least they've figured out an identity and stuck to it and it's worked. And Miami just hasn't done that this year, but also hasn't had the luxury to do that this year because of the injury. So it'll be, I think it's an interesting, obviously Pitt and Miami feels like are always, like you said, playing big games and relatively evenly matched. So I think it's a good final measuring stick for this team. Obviously, like we said, if they win, they make a bowl. But it's a good measuring stick for Mario and Gattis and what these guys are trying to do. That if they can win a game like this, you know, honestly, a win would be Miami's best win of the year.
Yeah, it would be really big. What a nice way to go out.
They haven't, now that I think about it, I don't know what Southern Miss has done, but they haven't beaten a team that's going to make a bowl game all year.
Man, I didn't think about that one. That's going to have to be my gamer possibly.
Southern Miss might technically, I think they have enough wins. But yeah, wow. It's, I think about it.
That's kind of interesting.
Southern Miss 5-6. So they got to win this weekend to make a bowl. Obviously,
wow.
Virginia and Virginia Tech are not going to make a bowl game. And then Bethune-Cookman is, so Miami has not beaten a team that's going to qualify for a bowl game this year. So
hey, don't say it any more times, because I got to put that in my story.
There you go. They got to,
that's good.
To be easily their biggest win of the year, which, that's another component of it.
Really true. And by the way, Abanaconda, I think, unless I have it spelled wrong. And I might. He has 100 yard games. He leads the nation in touchdowns, is second in the nation in all purpose yards, 168.6 a game. And he's second in the nation in rushing touchdowns with 18.
Yeah.
And he's sixth in rushing yards per game, 132. So
yeah, it's an old school Pitt team. It's a Pitt team you're used to seeing. And obviously that's kind of what Miami wants to do too. And they just haven't been able to do that this year.
And by the way, and you know, the ESPN FPI, mm-hmm. the football power index,
yeah.
And they give you all the percentages. They give Miami, I looked it up last night, a 44.6% chance to win Saturday.
That sounds about right to me. Slight underdogs, right?
I would say yeah. So. Yep.
The importance of a bowl game. Obviously, it's the hot topic this time of year, every year. Do you buy into you need the extra practices, all that? How important is the bowl? Is making a bowl for this team?
I do. I for every reason. I for the, unless they lose again. That's a problem.
Seem to lose these games.
They always seem to lose. I mean, the thing is, making a bowl game to me is important. It's really good for morale for the program. It's good for recruits to see. I mean, God, if they finish 5-7, I don't know. I know Mario's a great recruiter and stuff. Mm-hmm. They get the extra practices in, and it's not, by the way, it's not like 15 extra practices. Okay. There really is no NCAA rule, as far as I know, on practices. And what happens is, because the kids have off, because the kids are studying for finals, because all this stuff happens, they usually only get, believe it or not, like a week.
Yeah, a week.
Week and a half.
When the game falls. Yeah.
They don't get many practices. But the point is, they get it. And the young recruits can come watch practices. They let them come and stand on the sideline, mm-hmm. And it's like exciting again. And they go get their little bowl. It's fun for the kids. It's really, I think it's a nice experience. The problem is that they just lose all the time. Right. So, and you and I have been there. We're at the Independence Bowl at the whatever, and it's a
Pinstripe Bowl. And the bowl losses tend to be pretty bad.
Horrible.
So you think about how the last couple of bowl games have gone for Miami. Last year canceled for COVID. The year before, Derek King gets hurt. The year before that that's the Independence Bowl. Dan Enos gets fired the next day. The year before that is the Pinstripe Bowl where Mark Richt retires the next day.
Oh, that was just, God, do you remember that? Nikosi Perry fiasco.
Yeah, the bowl games have been bad for Miami. They've been net negatives, I would say, over the last couple of years.
They've been negatives, but you got to, maybe the negatives will end.
Yeah, exactly. You can't just assume that because it's gone bad poorly in the past, it's going to go poorly again. So I think the bowl's important. I think obviously the practice stuff is important. But I think Mario needs you need to show some sign of pride. I mean, like you said, he's keeping this recruiting class together for the most part. What would 5-7 do to it? I don't know, but I know that 7-5 with a win against, I mean, it's not going to be anyone important. It's better. It's better.
But David, also, for this game coming up, this one right now, it would be really important those young players, for them to show that there's hope for the future.
Right, exactly. Just winning this game would be the most positive thing Mario Cristobal can point to from on field this year.
At least for a month.
Which is important. Yeah, exactly.
Or plus, whatever, so.
Yeah.
Yep.
And yeah, with so many young guys, I mean, every game matters too. Like it's every game is another chance to evaluate. And as Mario is trying to reshape this team this offseason, We've already had four guys go in the transfer portal. It might be another couple before this post. Like, that would not be surprising. Every game is, you know, if you get to the bowl game and I don't know, someone you don't expect to all of a sudden looks like a future starter, it shapes what you feel like you need to do in the portal. Like, the, like every game is a chance to evaluate. Really true. And for a first year coach, it's much better to have 13 games to look at than it is to have 12. It's an extra 60 minutes of football to look at.
Agree. And maybe in closing, I would say that I feel for Mario because these next few weeks, I mean, not only are there going to be a ton, he's going to have to be meeting with everybody and a ton of guys are going to go in the transfer portal, but he's got to keep his eye with Alonzo Highsmith. Thank God for Alonzo, I think, you know, seeing the other side of it, right? Who's entering the portal? He's got a lot of figuring out and shuffling and stuff to do and planning for a game. And yeah, I mean, he usually gets what? Four and a half hours of sleep a night, maybe. I think his wife told me that maybe now it'll be like 3.5.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's gonna be busy. I mean, the portal is like you said, it's going to be, they're gonna have to add a lot to it, but as Mario said on Monday, like, they're also kind of like telling kids who are maybe don't have a future role here. So like there's gonna be a big exodus as well, that, you know, some of it might be guys that Mario wishes he could keep, but a lot of it is going to be just kind of culling the roster and bringing in improvements he hopes in the summer. Yeah, the portal in his first offseason was, I'd say, a little bit of a mixed bag. I think pretty much every one of those guys he got has been a contributor.
Okay.
Mesidor is bit looks like a star, but he, you know, obviously they needed more. It kind of feels like now, like, they could probably use another receiver. Like, there's a couple spots where they're going to have to do a better job in the portal this offseason if the team wants to get back to really contending. And then, like we said, Tyler Van Dyke really don't have a sense of what his thought process is right now, whether he's going to come back, transfer, or go pro. And that'll determine a lot of about what this team can be in the immediate future. Anyway, we're just about out of time, so let's wrap up there. You can follow Susan on Twitter at @smillerdegnan. She'll have your preview probably up by the time you're listening to this. You can follow me on Twitter at @dbwilson2. We'll both be at Hard Rock Stadium on Saturday for the final regular season game for the Miami Hurricanes. And they hope it will not be the final game for the 2022 season. We'll see if they can qualify for a bowl game. We'll be back next week to wrap up the regular season and maybe talk about some possible bowl destinations. We'll see.
Would love that. Anyway, yes. Happy Thanksgiving to all. Thank you for everything. And I'm thankful for everything.
All right. Thanks, everyone. We'll talk to you guys next week.